Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Matt Alagaya, and today's topic is books, of which we'll be reviewing three that take us from Jamaica's August town to a Victorian English boarding school via South Korea. And joining me in the studio to talk through all three is Sarah Shaffy, online editor at The Bookseller. Welcome, Sarah. Now, before we discuss these three books, we should probably have a quick chat about the Man Booker longlist that was announced earlier on this week. The prestigious prize was first awarded in 1969 and awards an author of fiction £50,000 each year, although the prestige is a bit more than the prize money, I imagine. Sarah, talk us through this year's list.
Yeah, so we had the Man Booker dozen, which is actually a baker's dozen of 13. And I think the thing to notice most about it was that it was quite an unusual list. Almost a third of the list are debut novels, and many of the others are authors that probably have slipped under the radar a bit this year. One of the biggest names on the list is probably former winner James Kurtzey, who, if he wins this time round, it'll be the third time he's won, and he'll become the first person to win three times. So there are a lot of, as I said, unknowns on there. I think it'll make for really interesting reading and a lot of debate to come.
And are there any kind of big omissions in there? I mean, are there any books that people were thinking would definitely be on the long list and have not made it?
It's always difficult to judge, because judging panels are such a personal thing, and you never know what happens in that room. But Ian McEwan's got a book coming out in September. You might have expected to see someone like him on there. We obviously had Lionel Shriver release something earlier this year. I know a lot of people were fans of Chris Cleave. So there are a few names that aren't on there, but I guess it makes for an all the more interesting list.
And are you have you got any picks yet, or are you going to keep your cards close to your chest?
Oh, no, I haven't got any picks yet. I'll be attempting to read all 13 before the shortlist is announced in September, but we'll see how that goes.
Fantastic. The Man Booker shortlist will be announced on 13th of September, as Sarah said, and the winner will be revealed on October 25th. Let's move on to some non-Man Booker nominees, but some books that might be worthy of your attention nonetheless. Sarah, our first book today is August Town by the poet Kay Miller. This is his debut novel. Tell us a little bit about the story of this one.
So it's set in 1982 in a community called August Town, all one word, in Jamaica, which is loosely based on a real place called August Town. Two words. And the catalyst for the events in the books is when a young boy comes home from school. He's a Rastafarian, and his dreadlocks have been cut off by someone. And what unfolds is us dipping back into the past of a woman called Ma Taffy, who is sort of his grandmother. She is half blind. We kind of go round the community up into the hills where more wealthy people live. And it's all set in the course of one day and building to another event that will change everything forever.
Wow, it sounds really interesting. I mean, this is obviously by a poet. Do you get a sense of the kind of the language is a bit poetic? I mean, it's obviously a novel, but can you tell that he's normally a poet?
Absolutely. There's a lyricism to it. The way the book is set out, it's almost a series of interconnected vignettes rather than a novel in the traditional sense. And you can definitely tell, I mean, the language is beautiful, the way he evokes the sense of place and the sense of time. There's a bit of, there's kind of a mystical element to it all as well. One of the stories Ma Taffy tells is about the flying preacherman, which is almost exactly what it sounds like. So there's a lot of different elements coming into this, a bit of folk storytelling as well. And I think Miller's poetic background really comes through.
I mean, people have actually said that, you know, August Town could actually be described as the main character of this book. It's kind of the thing that's sort of at the centre that everyone else is talking about. Do you think that's a fair comment?
Absolutely. I think this is about a place and all the different people that live in it, and the racial and class divides, also the way people are brought together as well. I think it is very much based on the geography of this town. Like I say, when you meet some of the characters who are better off in the book, they physically live in a higher place, you know, than kind of some of the poorer residents. So there is an importance to the geography in the novel.
And I mean, we've talked about Jamaican literature a fair amount on this show recently. It's obviously risen in popularity since Marlon James's last year. He won the Man Booker with A Brief History of Seven Killings. I mean, do you think the Man Booker has kind of holds this great power to dictate the trends of the years ahead?
I think the Man Booker is about discovering a book or a series of books from the shortlist. I don't know if we can say that suddenly novels about Jamaica have become popular because A Brief History of Seven Killings won the Man Booker Prize last year. And Miller is, you know, he's a popular poet. He won the Forward Prize, I believe it was. So he is known and he's someone that's been nurtured and who's been working for a long time. And I think maybe it's just coincidence that this has come out now, or maybe it is linked and, you know, we'll never know.
August Town by Kay Miller is out today, published by Weidenfeld and Nicholson. Our next read takes us to South Korea, where Sun Mi Hwang's The Dog Who Dared to Dream has been translated into English. People might know Hwang's work from the hugely successful The Hen Who Dreamed She Could Fly, which has been translated into over 27 languages, was turned into a popular animated series in South Korea and a play, as well as remaining on bestseller lists for 10 years and selling 2 million copies. Sarah, Sun Mi Hwang's stories have been described as kind of fables. What sort of books does she write?
So this is very much a kind of a one man and his dog tale, and it is a fable. It's a story about the life of a dog, and obviously therefore is very much fiction. I don't think this is anything that we can kind of relate to in the sense that we're human beings, but the lessons to be learned from it and the emotions and experiences are very human.
And is it told from the point of view of the dog? I mean, is this a first person narrative?
It's not in first person. I don't know if we could say first person with a dog, but it is, I mean, it's very much from the level of the dog in the tale, Scraggly. So from the beginning of her life, just before she's born. So we start with her mother, and then we go through her whole life and see her owners, who are called her grandma and her grandpa, and kind of her children and what happens to her.
And how does Hwang make us, you know, as you said, as humans, relate to a dog effectively? I mean, are we brought along this journey, you know, thinking the sort of basic things of a dog, or are there some very emotional moments?
No, there are lots of really emotional moments, and it's not a book which has got a dog speaking in barks through it. You know, there's kind of not dozens of woofs throughout it or anything like that. And I think credit also has to go to the translator, Chi Young Kim, as well, who has obviously played a huge part in how we read this story. But it is a really emotional story. It's about family, about loss, about love, and about the dreams that we have and how we get there. So, and those are all absolutely things that we can relate to.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things, I guess, similar in a way to telling a story through the eyes of a child. You know, you get this kind of honesty and this naivety that comes through. Is that something that we see here? I mean, what can you do with an animal as your protagonist that you couldn't necessarily do with a human being as a protagonist?
I think you're taking people into a space that they don't necessarily know. So it's all about the emotions and experiences, and you're coming into it with no real preconceived notions about how you as a human being would act to a situation. It's very honest storytelling, and like you say, there's a certain naivety to parts of it, because you do start with Scraggly as a baby, knowing nothing and kind of moving through that. And I think I don't know if we'd have a harder time reading a book that did start with a newborn baby having thoughts and emotions about the things that they're experiencing. So in a way, it's no different with a dog, I think.
And obviously, I mentioned that The Hen Who Dreamed She Could Fly was incredibly popular, you know, 10 years on the bestseller lists, 2 million copies sold worldwide. Do you think this has the potential to be as wildly successful as that?
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful book. It's bittersweet. And I think it's one of those that is going to be a real word of mouth book. I think it's one of those you pick up and you're surprised by how enjoyable it is and how connected you feel to it. And you tell someone else and they tell someone else. So hopefully, yeah, in 10 years time, this one will be as big.
The Dog Who Dared to Dream is out now, published by Abacus. Our final book today has been marketed as a commercially canny hybrid of Harry Potter and Northern Lights, which is quite a claim. The book is called Smoke by Czech-German writer Dan Violetta. Sarah, is this a justified statement? I mean, can we really say that this is some sort of hybrid of Harry Potter and Northern Lights?
I think it's a lot to live up to. I think Violetta does his best, and I think he succeeds in a lot of ways. I don't know that I would say it is quite reaching the heights of Harry Potter and of J.K. Rowling and Philip Pullman, but who does, you know, they've created huge worlds across a number of books that people really love. But this is certainly really interesting and definitely has the kind of the magic that Pullman and Rowling's books have.
So tell us a little bit about this book and I guess about the central premise, which is quite an interesting one and quite an innovative kind of device that Violetta uses.
Yeah, so it's set in 19th century Oxford, but the world is slightly different to how our history tells it, in that basically sin shows itself as smoke releasing from your body. So every angry thought you have, every lustful thought you have, smoke comes out of you in various thicknesses and colours. So there's no hiding anywhere in this world.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, like, there's obviously quite a lot of religious connotations to saying, you know, sin, visible sin. Mm-hmm. What do you think the author's trying to say about the nature of sin and about the nature of kind of suppressing sin?
So we kind of start with two young boys at a boarding school and their journey into discovering that perhaps what they've been told about smoke and sin is not as clear cut as they've been led to believe. And I think there's a lot of discussion in here about what is sin, because there are people in the book that lie and don't smoke. So why is that? And also there's a lot in there about how without sin, what is a life? If you can't feel anger or pain or jealousy or lust, is that really a life worth living? Are you feeling anything? And if you're not feeling anything, why, you know, it doesn't really work.
I mean, does the rest of the world kind of resemble a world that we might know from, say, Charles Dickens or something, like, you know, something set in a similar time? Or are there other kind of slightly mystical, magical elements here?
There's a real mix. So I believe the author got the idea from the book, from a quote in a Charles Dickens novel, and we very quickly visit London in the novel, and the London there is a bit Dickens-esque, although much dirtier and much darker.
Dirtier than Dickens' London, well.
Yeah, because of this physical manifestation of sin, there is smoke everywhere, as well as pollution and soot that would, you know, be part of 19th century London. But there is some, I don't know if magic is the right word necessarily, but there's certainly kind of an otherworldly element of some sort, maybe a kind of Jonathan Strange-esque type of thing going on.
And I guess, you know, one of the things that unites Harry Potter and Northern Lights, you know, not to bang on about them, but they're both a children's book and also they can be read by adults. I mean, that's a hugely commercially very clever place to place your book. Do you think this can be read by both children and adults? Is there enough there to satisfy both?
Definitely. I think some of the ideas in Smoke might be quite complex, but its protagonists are three children, and I won't bang on about Harry Potter, but like Harry Potter, it's two young boys and a girl that they meet, and, you know, there's an adventure thread throughout the book, so there are similarities there that I think young people would really enjoy and that adults would get a lot out of as well, in kind of some of the deeper questions that the book is asking.
Fantastic. Smoke by Dan Violetta is out now, published by Weidenfeld and Nicholson. And I'm afraid that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, Sarah Shaffy. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our film review. But for now, thanks very much for listening and goodbye.